Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer, a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity. And so on this podcast, we explore what that looks like. I share strategies and tips, but also I share stories and I talk to you about the mistakes I've made along the way, because it's a journey for me as well. Right now, we're focusing on project-based learning. We've been doing this series for, a little over a month. Maybe it's almost been 2 months. And I'm going to actually revisit something that I talked about last fall, winter. It's kind of hard to tell in Oregon. It's just gray and rainy half the year. So I don't know if it was fall or winter. But we're going to take a deep dive into this idea of what it looks like to have group collaboration where all students are actually participating. You know, what does that look like? And a word of caution, when I say all students participating, they're not all going to participate at all times, and that's okay. The goal is to get them to be participating most of the time. So let's go ahead and dive right in. One of the most frequent questions I hear about PBL is, how do we get all of the members in a group to participate? I've heard that question posed in early elementary and in secondary education. Teachers in private and public schools share the same concern. Collaboration in PBL can be tricky. It can be tempting to scrap the team aspect altogether and to push for solo or partner projects. And by the way, there's a time and a place for both types of projects. But when students engage in meaningful collaborative projects, they learn so many transferable skills. Through meaningful dialogue, they improve their communication and their critical thinking skills. They learn how to resolve conflict. They grow more empathetic. They share ownership in the process, and they become systems thinkers, and they learn how to engage in iterative thinking. And they do these in ways that really they couldn't do just on their own. But this requires specific strategies that facilitate this meaningful collaboration. So what happens when group work fails in a PBL unit? Because sometimes it does. Well, we've all been there before as students. The teacher announces a group project and your stomach turns. You glance at the assigned group members and you try to determine just how much extra work you'll need to do in order to pick up the slack for the members who are going to do nothing. Chances are you'll have to spend a few nights on your own, maybe some weekends, finishing random tasks only to have the same shared group grade in the end. But looking back on it now, you get it. As a teacher, you recognize that it is hard to encourage full participation in group projects. At the same time, you've probably experienced the positive side of group collaboration. You have probably had moments where your team just seems to be in sync, not the 90s boy band, but just, you know, actually being in sync. With each member sharing ideas, adding a unique voice, and working hard to accomplish a goal. And in these moments, you have been engaged in true collaboration, where the group is able to accomplish more together than they would have accomplished individually. So how do we craft our PBL units in a way to encourage full participation from every single group member? How do we ensure that every student is actively engaged in the collaborative process? Well, it helps to think about why students are disengaging in the first place. If you consider why they aren't participating, you'll notice that it varies from group to group and from student to student. Sometimes it's insecurity. A group member is just insecure or afraid of doing subpar work, so they quit before starting. Sometimes it's low skills. They talk about this in flow theory. It's this idea that the skill must match the task at hand. And when it doesn't happen, students experience this anxiety that's hard to get over. Sometimes it's just confusion. A group member isn't sure what he or she is supposed to do. The group roles aren't very well clarified. And maybe you haven't necessarily clarified that very well for your students as well. Sometimes it's just unhealthy group dynamics. There's unresolved conflict that needs to be addressed, but instead the group moves on and certain group members sort of, well, they kind of check out. It could be a lack of buy-in. A group member who doesn't have a sense of ownership will have a hard time sticking with a project. And it can feel especially hard. I think I just said especially. That drives me crazy when people do that. Especially hard if it's something that you're not into. So the project has to be something kids want to do. And then it could just be a lack of creative endurance. Sometimes a student disengages because creative work can be hard and it can even be boring. It can be kind of like working out. So what do we do about that? Well, here's the bad news. You'll never have 100% active engagement in a PBL unit. It's just not going to happen. Even with the most epic projects ever, you'll have students who turn away and talk about video games or stare out the window or who just kind of shut down. But honestly, isn't that really kind of part of the creative process? Think about your favorite projects that you've ever done. True, there were times where you reached that state of creative flow and it was amazing. But sometimes you struggled. You struggled to even get started. You had to turn away. Sometimes you looked like you were disengaged, but you were actually internally trying to solve a problem. Sometimes it felt too difficult for you and you just quit. The same thing happens with students. So what do we do about that? Well, here are 7 strategies to ensure active participation in group projects. Number 1, begin with student ownership. The Buck Institute of Education, or for Education, identifies voice and choice as one of their key design elements in PBL. If we want students to be truly engaged, we need to move beyond simply engagement and into empowerment. Students need to own the project process. And this is why I love the launch cycle. It's kind of a roadmap for student ownership. And here's what I mean. In the L phase of look, listen, and learn, students are tapping into their awareness and background knowledge. Students then own the inquiry process as they ask specific questions in the ask tons of questions phase. Students own the research process during the understand the process or problem phase. Students are generating their own ideas and designing their own plans during the navigate ideas phase. Students are creating prototypes while engaging in project management during the C part, the create a prototype phase. And then afterwards, they're owning the revision and assessment during the highlight and fix phase. And then at the very end, they're determining the audience and marketing their work to the world in the final launch to an audience phase. Now, if you're interested in using design thinking, I just want to tell you there is a toolkit on my blog. If you go to spencerauthor.com, you can check out that toolkit. I also want to tell you right here in the middle that there is a webinar for design thinking and also a PBL webinar. I have a course that I'm going to be releasing really soon. If you're interested in the course and you're interested in getting started with PBL, check out that webinar. So, number 2. Empower students to find the right scaffolding. So they start out with this sense of ownership, but sometimes they need to actually have a little bit of help when it comes to actually accessing the skills for the project. As mentioned earlier, students are likely to check out during a project if tasks become too difficult for them. But this is where scaffolding comes into play. You might provide sentence stems for language, additional tutorials for how to do research, or maybe even pull a small group to do some targeted skill work that they need in the midst of the project. But the process does not always need to be so teacher-directed. When you empower students to find the right scaffolds, they are able to look for the structures and tutorials needed to accomplish a task. I want to point out that this requires some initial modeling. Not every student will know how to figure out what they know, what they don't know, and what they need to know in order to reach their goal. But as groups are working interdependently, you can pull students aside and walk them through this thinking process. In some cases, you might even have group members work with each other to help learn how to find the scaffolds. But ownership and scaffolding isn't enough. Students can have buy-in, they can have a sense of clarity on what they're supposed to be doing, they can know what they're supposed to do, they can be excited about it, they can be ready to go, they can have the right scaffold that meets their skill, and still they end up checking out. And this is because they quite honestly are just getting tired of each other. And that leads to point number three, vary the grouping. Create moments within a PBL unit where students can work independently and process things on their own. And this is especially true for introverts. Even in a collaborative PBL unit, sometimes it helps to start the class period with like an individual warm-up. They might be answering a question, planning out their task, reflecting on their learning, but they need that time to sort of think first and then engage with a group. But it also needs to be part of kind of the integrated whole of the project process. So here's what I mean. During the inquiry phase, you're going to have students asking their own questions before moving into a group. During brainstorming, ask students to generate ideas alone before getting together to share their ideas as a group. During research, allow students to individually have their own reading time. And so you're always, even in the midst of a group project, finding those moments where students can still work independently. When students have moments alone, they're able to have a space for autonomy within their group. They don't lose their sense of voice and choice. And this can decrease the insecurity they might be experiencing while also helping them engage in tasks that meet their skill levels. There's more buy-in because they have a space that values their agency. So the idea is that they have a space where they can thrive. It also helps to break up grouping so that, you know, you might send students to another group and then they work with, you know, members of different groups work with each other. Then they come back and bring information to their own groups. You might do a jigsaw, you might do a peer feedback system, something like that. It just breaks it up a little bit and gives them, a break from it. But even then, there are still going to be times where students check out. And it's simply because they're afraid and they're insecure. And that's normal. This is why it helps to rethink the way we assess student projects. And that's point number four. Don't grade the project. When I first started out on the PBL journey, I used project rubrics all the time. And I used them to grade their finished product. But certain students who struggled with self-efficacy would simply give up and later and let the more advanced students step in and complete the work. Later, I focused on the process. But again, this backfired as students were asking, am I doing it right? Is this the right process? And they were obsessed with the protocol. And then PBL became a formula. Eventually, I made a shift that it wasn't about the process or the product. It was about the learning. And I shifted toward standard-based grading. Instead of grading the group, I would assess each student individually on the mastery of the standards. This meant that I wasn't focused on, the final product. And students who were struggling with a particular skill were no longer scared that they were bringing down their group. They had the permission to make mistakes. And over time, they began to embrace a student-centered assessment model. They were doing self-assessment, peer assessment, and student-teacher conferences. Now, this admittedly felt risky. If there was no official project grade, would students simply check out altogether? Well, actually, engagement increased because they were motivated by the challenge of the task and the ownership of the process. So, to my surprise, they actually didn't disengage. There were still some moments where they didn't meet deadlines, still some moments where they got frustrated, but again, that was happening beforehand anyway. It wasn't perfect. Certain students still felt insecure about their skills, especially when they were launching to an audience. But this is why I bring up point number five, incorporate interdependent structures. The best projects are the ones where the group creates something way more epic together than what they would individually create on their own. And I give the example of how we do brainstorming in the fact that students are forced to work together and to work interdependently. And because of that, they're then able to have something better as a result. Another example of this would be kind of the inquiry process, where students are able to share ideas and ask questions before doing research. And then during the research process, they also benefit from the new information that each group member shares. During project management, students depend on each other to do specific tasks. When groups function well, they're able to build on each other's strengths so that each member is adding to their own expertise. So on one hand, you have these tasks where they are forced to work together, but then you also have the second side where they are kind of building on each other's strengths, and you're giving them the permission to sort of bring out their best strengths and then use those in the projects that you're creating. And I noticed, for example, some students who, I had one student who was amazing at video editing, and he just had an eye for detail and precision. And so even though he struggled with some of the verbal aspects of script writing in a documentary, and he was on the spectrum and kind of self-conscious about that, he was amazing at video editing. And that was a huge part of what he did. Now, that didn't mean he didn't contribute to the script. It didn't mean he didn't write or he didn't research, but they specifically depended on him. And I love that example. Now, this is admittedly difficult. True interdependence often takes time and intentionality. Sometimes that's tough for kids. Younger students, I've noticed, seem to have an easier time depending on one another, but they have a harder time navigating systems and structures. Older students can sometimes have a harder time trusting the, you know, strangers in their group, but they're really adept at determining interdependent group roles. But that's the joy of this. You get to teach them how to work interdependently. And the more projects they do, the better they are at that, which is why I love going project-based. Now, number six is to teach students how to resolve conflicts, because even if they're working interdependently, there will be conflict. So here's where I really depend on other people, because this was not my strongest point as a teacher. I'm kind of conflict avoidant. I don't enjoy it. It's not my thing. But some people handle this really, really well as teachers. I would often be kind of oblivious as a classroom teacher to the conflict going on between group members. So I've asked some of my favorite project-based teachers to share their strategies for resolving student conflict. And this is a question I've been asking for a few years now. Now, my friend Javi used to have scheduled group check-ins, which I thought were great. And he would ask students questions to get a sense of any inherent conflict. This was proactive. It required the conflict-averse students to admit that there was some conflict and to kind of lean into it. My friend Alejandra taught specific conflict resolution skills and a process for her students. She also had them develop norms and rituals, which I thought was great. I know a teacher named Amy who uses group mediators, and they kind of step in as a neutral third party to talk through the conflict. But sometimes it takes a certain level of accountability. My friend Trevor has put together group accountability contracts where members might be asked to leave the group and finish the project separately on their own. Now, they know ahead of time they've signed the contract, and it's the worst case scenario, but it's a structure that works. Now, these structures can seem time consuming, but they're worth it. By resolving conflicts, students are able to work interdependently and get back on track. In the process, they learn the valuable skill that will help them with communication and collaboration in the future. And that leads me to the final point, number seven, build creative endurance. Students struggle with reading when they don't read. Similarly, they can't run a mile if they've never gotten on the track and ran. The same is true with creative projects. Students will not learn how to design, communicate, and iterate unless they work on multiple projects. If creative work is something you do when you have time, you'll find that students work slowly, give up easily, and quite honestly, you never have time. On the other hand, when we think of reading fluency or computational fluency, the same can be true of creative fluency, the ability to create work and get faster at the work that you're doing. And I think that's what you're going for. You want this sort of creative fluency. And because of that, you need creative endurance. And the only way to develop that creative endurance is to actually have students doing creative work frequently in the classroom. And this is why I ultimately love project-based learning. Instead of doing culminating projects on the side, students learn through the projects and as a result develop that creative endurance. They also learn how to communicate and collaborate and solve problems. And in the process, they grow into the kinds of project people we know they can become. They are the ones who can navigate the ever-changing world. Hey, thank you for listening to the Creative Classroom Podcast. If you enjoy this podcast at all, would you do me a favor and leave a review on iTunes or Stitcher? Again, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic day and go out and make something awesome.